Morena, Steve Abel from the Green Party. How are you?
Kia ora. Good, thank you. Thanks for having me.
Now, this morning we're talking about the Fast Track Approval Bill. It's recently had some changes. Let's get straight to it. Given the controversy surrounding the original bill's potential for misuse, Steve, do you think the revised bill will still pose risks to New Zealand's environmental protections and also potentially democratic processes?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, they've really just tinkered around the edges. It is the most notable thing, I suppose, that the ministers aren't going to get the final sign-off. Mm. The panel will. But the glaring sort of absence of the bill is its recognition that the environment needs to be taken into account. So it continues to override the Resource Management Act, which is our primary piece of environmental protection legislation, the Wildlife Act. There's no certainty that water conservation orders will be upheld. Those are 16 places in the country recognised as having such significant...
Those will be upheld?
...water values that they will be protected under special status, and those are not currently planned to be upheld.
So, oh, they're for not, example, we talked about the... was there like a gold mine or something going on down the
right,
road from the...
Te Wai Korapupu Spring has been threatened by the Siren gold mine.
Oh,
in Taka,
man,
and,
that's
and that's
shocking.
Still on the table. Yeah, it is shocking. And I mean, you would have seen, perhaps your listeners would have seen the Ahene Mui River turn orange this week when an old mine leaked its waste into the river, and the sampling showed that it contained arsenic, which is a classic byproduct of old gold or silver mines or coal mines too. Acid mine drainage is the lasting legacy of mines. And that mine, the Comstock line, could be up to 100 years old. So that's an example of the decades of pollution that continues to be produced by mines long after they've closed and the companies that ran them have disappeared off the face of the earth.
Steve, just like some numbers here. So 384 projects have already applied for the Fast Track scheme, including 21 mining projects.
Yeah.
How do you feel about the proportion of mining projects compared to others? Does this reflect a balanced approach to development in Aotearoa?
I mean, it's basically who applied. So 21 mining projects is significant. We don't know what they are, where they are, whether they're on conservation land or not. We do know that Strattera, the big mining lobbyist, has fought hard to make sure that conservation land remains open to mining, and has fought hard against water protection that would stop.
That's crazy. It's so crazy that this is being discussed, that conservation land is up for mining. It is... Sorry, Steve. Keep going.
Yeah, well, exactly. I mean, I think most New Zealanders think that if you set aside land specifically for the purpose of protecting our native flora and fauna and biodiversity, that land is going to be used for that purpose. It's not going to be used for, you know, Aussie gold miners or coal miners or whatever, who are going to specifically go in and harm and destroy that protected native ecology to extract minerals and then leave a legacy. The irony of the Comstock mine is it actually sits on conservation land. So I saw one article blaming the conservation department for not putting signage up warning of this toxic mine that's on their land.
Yes.
I mean, that mine would have existed before there was conservation estate, obviously, but the point is that mining shouldn't be happening on conservation land.
Mm. Hmm. Just digging into the specific elements of the updated bill, do you think there are elements that still allow infrastructure projects to negatively impact the environment despite the recent changes?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the point is that the certain things we need, like we definitely need a big increase in the amount of wind generation and solar generation and that sort of thing. But that shouldn't be done without any consideration of the environment, because even those are industrial infrastructure and they need to take into account what the environmental consequences of their existence is. For that to be put so low down the scale of considerations is really problematic. It sets us up for a situation where projects get consent and approval that are doing a lot of harm, not harm that warrants their the good that they offer, but also it just lumps everything in the same basket. So whether you're opening a coal mine or you're boarding a wind farm, you're in the same basket. as all of these projects in this sort of soup of we want to develop everything and all the things, which is not a plan. It's not a trajectory for our country that takes us towards clean energy, that takes us towards sustainable you know, development that we support, like housing projects and so forth. It's just a plan that says we want anything and everything you've got, as long as it's going to drive economic growth and potentially provide jobs.
CBA,
don't
mining,
see any
whatever.
Distinction between public projects or private projects, and we don't see any distinction between coal mines and wind farms. And that's just, you know, that is not a plan. That is not a sort of vision for where we're trying to head as a planet, which is towards, you know, low carbon society.
Yeah, yeah. Now, just winding back a bit, with the shift from ministerial decision making to an expert panel, do you believe that the expert panel will have the necessary expertise and authority to effectively balance development with environmental protection?
I mean, clearly not. They've sort of got one potential person who's going to take on the environmental considerations, but these are appointed panels. They're often influenced by the politics who have the reins at the time, and so they're likely to be dominated by those who have a particular attitude to overriding environmental considerations or iwi considerations. The failure to include Te Tiriti or Waitangi as a consideration is a major problem. Only iwi who have settled will be consulted and involved. So that's a weakening of the COVID fast-track legislation that the Labor government put in, which was this is modelled on. And the other primary notable thing is that in the purpose of this new fast-track legislation, there is no mention of sustainable management. So explicitly the purpose of the Act doesn't include a reference to a need to take care of the environment. So I have no confidence, and we have no confidence at all, that we might see some really bad environmental outcomes from this fast-track legislation. The obvious one's been things like seabed mining off Taranaki, or you know, a really destructive, you know, roading project, or a you know, the dairy farm that could be put in a place that really harms fresh water.
As far as transparency around the bill, will the public be able to see what is being applied for? Is there a way that people can see what is applied and applied for and what's approved and that sort of stuff?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, they know that there's 300-something projects, but they won't tell us what they are.
Okay.
So this is the transparency is terrible on this. Why doesn't Chris Bishop release the list of projects for the public to scrutinise? Like, that is a, you know, that's an example of how untransparent it is.
How do you respond to Chris Bishop's comments that the government has been responsive to people's concerns and has thus made some changes?
Yeah, I mean, it's tinkering, really, and the substantive response would be to allow public input for a start. That's the other really notable thing, is the lack of local input. Regional councils won't automatically get a say on projects that might be that are in their region, and local members of the public won't get a say either. So, for example, back to that example of the Golden Bay gold mine, 10 years they fought to get the water conservation order that protects the Te Waikaropuupu Springs. And the locals fought for that, and they paid the cost of that, around $200,000, to get that conservation order. Under this legislation, if Siren is one of the companies applying for a consent, the public and the locals who fought so hard to protect their water won't even get an automatic right to have a say on that project. And that's appalling. That's a real undermining of the idea of local say, or, you know, community decision making. And that's a real mark of the government as well. Last night we passed the legislation, or the government passed the legislation, that we fiercely opposed, which gave automatic 20-year extensions to every single marine farm in the state, 1,200 of them. Now that absolutely is central government overriding the say of regional councils and local councils and local people to make decisions about how the commons, the oceans, is used. And so this is another example of that, where the public are cut out of decision making.
Wow. What additional safeguards would the Green Party want in this proposed bill for environmental protection?
I mean, the obvious thing would be to say public good must be a criteria. Environmental and climate benefits must be a criteria. The purpose should include, is it going to help us get to a low emissions society? Mm. Is it going to look after the environment? And the other obvious thing would be to exclude projects that had already been defeated through existing Environment Protection Authority processes or consenting processes or legal processes. So things like the Trans-Tasman Resources seabed mining, which spent 10 years trying to get a consent, was rejected all the way down the line, including at the Supreme Court, ultimately kicked back to the EPA. That sort of a project shouldn't get a second bite of the cherry. You know, it's been yes. seriously scrutinised and found wanting. Why are they allowed to come back yeah. and have another go?
Yeah, it's crazy.
There's many examples of projects like that. The Ruatanifa Dam is like that. The Te Kuha coal mine on the west coast, also rejected by previous consenting processes.
Yeah.
Those projects shouldn't be on the table.
Yes, yes. Now, just looking toward the future and planning, it feels like we should be long-term planning here, Steve, you know, going for this low emission and green economy, if that's possible. How is the public going to make a shift to like thinking 200 years into the future? How is that done? How do we do it? How do we start that process?
Yeah, you know, I mean, one of the things I've meant is I feel like most people are actually able to think quite long-term like that. And when you have a conversation that doesn't need to take very long about the advantages of thinking long-term, about how we provide energy and resilience for our society. It's not by importing liquid natural gas, and it's not by remaining dependent on fossil fuels, which are finite. It's about building our own energy resilience. We have had problems in our energy system here with the generator retailers warting the market.
That really, selling the power stations really worked well for us, didn't it, guys?
Yeah, sitting on a whole lot of consents for wind farms that they didn't build. They had consents, but they didn't build them because they were making so much money at the spot pricing system, which means coal drives up the price of all the energy they've got, primarily hydro, because most of our electricity system is renewable already, like 80% plus. So, but the failure to actually act on the consents they had, when you talk to people about the long-term benefits of thinking like that, it's a no-brainer for most people.
Yes.
What we lack is the political will. This is a perennial challenge. The politicians are less imaginative than the people.
Yeah.
So I know that's sort of the basis on which we as the Greens want to present a case to the wider world of how we can do things differently. Things like poverty, things like being dependent on fossil fuels are actual political choices.
It's a choice, yeah.
And you can choose to do something different.
Yeah.
And that's what we're here to say. Hey, this is what we should be doing different if we want to have a livable planet, if we want everybody to thrive, if we want everybody to sit in a warm, dry home without, you know, fear of shivering through winter because they can't afford to pay their electricity bill.
Mm-hmm. Hey, Steve Abel, thank you very much for chatting to us this morning. We'll look forward to speaking with you in a couple of weeks' time.
Pleasure. Thank you for having me.
All good.
Awesome. That was the Green Party. The Wire.